Hello, it's Dan Le Batard. We will continue to bring you weekly people inside and outside of sports who are interesting. This guy is interesting for a number of different reasons, not the least of which is that he's willing to be publicly vulnerable in a way that you don't normally get from celebrity. Terry Crews is someone we've known for a long time. We met him at a party at the Versace Mansion, a Super Bowl party. He was McCheesy. He was the guy who, in the Longest Yard remake, was just hiding cheeseburgers in his pants. And his energy was infectious, and we enjoyed talking to him then, and he's taken Hollywood by storm since. Not just because he's willing to be vulnerable about stuff, but he's getting cool projects and doing interesting creative things. So we'll get to him in a second, but before we do that, I have to tell you about the sponsor who is making this possible. The entire interview is possible, and it is free because of ZipRecruiter. And we have an offer for you here. Mike Ryan, help me out with this on the details, what the sponsor needs told to the public about ZipRecruiter.com/beach.
Well, hiring, it used to be hard. Multiple job sites, they stack resumes, and it's a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be made easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. What's that place, Dan?
I guess it's ZipRecruiter.com, right?
Slash.
It'd be weird if I said something else.
No,
right?
It's not ZipRecruiter.com, Dan. It's ZipRecruiter.com/.
Beach. B-E-A-C-H.
Been doing this for weeks. You think you'd get better at it by now. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one of them and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. That's what I love so much about ZipRecruiter. And ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of its employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within day one. How impressive is that?
I want the whole crew to tell me what the slogan for ZipRecruiter is. Everybody back there, what's the slogan for ZipRecruiter?
Everyone knows it's ZipRecruiter. It's the smartest way to hire.
So smart.
Let's get to Terry Crews. I've really liked this guy for a long time, not just because of his work, but he's genuinely affable. He likes people. He's contagious. He's got a terrible cough. And he's sick because he works too much. But regardless, Terry Crews, you can see him on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Thursdays, 9 p.m., NBC. He's also hosting America's Got Talent, The Champions, Mondays at 8 p.m. on NBC. We've talked about a little bit of everything. We've talked about your life as a janitor, an assistant janitor. We've talked about a porn addiction. You are uncommonly willing to put yourself out there vulnerable publicly. I guess as I introduce you, I ask you why. Why do you do that? You are very comfortable giving people your vulnerabilities, and sometimes they can't be trusted with it.
Yeah, but you know what? This is the thing I found out is that when I was a kid, no one would tell me anything. No one. It was weird. I had questions about girls. I had questions about life, about money, about all this stuff. And they were like, you know what? You're going to find out. You're going to find out. And they wanted you to take all your lumps. And I was like, man, if one person could just freaking tell me what's going on, it would be really helpful. So I vowed, man, that when I get into a position where people want to know and they ask me, just tell them. You know what I mean? And tell them. And you know what? It hasn't hurt me. What's crazy is that you think that if you tell all your stuff, all of a sudden somebody's going to, you know, you're going to shrivel up and the whole thing. You know what I mean? Somebody sees how much money you make or they watch your check, all of a sudden you're going to lose all your money. And it doesn't work that way. In fact, people thank you. And they go, my God, thank you for telling me. You know, and I've been doing this for years, and I just decided, hey, man, tell it, go ahead, and you will be in a better place. And also, you can help other people get in a better place, man.
What is the most fulfilling or therapeutic thing along those lines that you've done where you have decided to share it with people so they can feel less lonely and it gives back to you?
First of all, when I came forward about my sexual assault at the hands of the head of the motion picture department at William Morris Endeavor, Adam Bennett. Now, this is the thing. People feel like, oh, you just came forward. You didn't say anything. No, I went right to them the next day. I went public months later. So that was the issue. I gave them many, many chances to work it out and try to come to a solution. I mean, this is the deal. I was literally giving them a shot. And they basically told me, you know, too bad, buddy. We ain't doing anything. And that really shook me up. And when the Ronan Farrow story broke regarding Harvey Weinstein and all the women came forward there, I was like, oh, my God, that happened to me. And the thing that really got me was that there were so many men that went in on these girls. They call them opportunists. They call them hoes. They call them gold diggers. And I was going, wait a minute. It happened to me. I just want to continue to work. You know what I'm saying? And this is the best example I could ever give. If you were a first-round draft pick, if some NFL team picked you and you had a big, you know, celebration, and the whole thing is right in front of the TV, and the owner comes over and he's like, congratulations, and he gropes you. People act like they're going to punch people and they're going to swing and they're going to do all this crazy stuff. But you know what you're going to do? You're going to go, oh, my God, this is the man that's going to – he's basically giving me $20 million and let's. How can we make this work? Because I still want to play football. You know what I mean? What are you going to do, quit the team? What are you going to do? So a lot of times people have a decision to make. And I had a decision to make. I had a decision, like, do I want to continue in this business or not? When I went forward with that information, I had decided that my Hollywood career would be over at that moment.
Really? You thought you were ending your career? Take us through the process. I didn't know that. Terry, take us through the process of making that decision. I'm sure that's something you talked about with your wife. Like, how did that conversation, how did those conversations go?
No, you know what was crazy is that I didn't talk to my wife. I didn't tell anybody. My publicist, no one knew. None of the people in my life knew. I was reading the story, and I went, oh, my God, this happened to me. And the only way I can really say and describe it is PTSD. And it really, you know, a lot of people say, well, that's crazy. You know, it's not like war. But you know what? When you're behind enemy lines, yes, it is. And I knew, I said, man, I got to tell my story. I felt like, if I did not back these ladies up with my story, I felt like a farce. I felt like I'm not telling the truth. And I literally wrote 16 tweets and pressed send and put the phone in my pocket, and the world changed. First thing I did when I came home, I was like, honey, are you on Twitter? She was like, yeah, yeah. I mean, but I didn't see anything. I said, sit down, because I got to tell you something. I told about, you know, what happened with me and Bennett, because she was there. And she was like, oh, my God, you told? I was like, yeah, the whole world knows now. And I said, babe, Hollywood is over. And she said, you know what? I'm with you. We'll just move on. We'll find something else to do. And that was the mood. That was the framework. That was the whole, you know, because I've seen so many careers that were ended. I mean, you can just look at Les Moonves and all the ladies back, you know, years ago, who basically you say something and you get X'd out. That's just how it goes. And everybody in Hollywood knows it. And you can pretend like it doesn't happen, but there's so many careers. You always wonder, what happened to that guy? Or what happened to that girl? That's what happened.
When did you get your first big break? I remember seeing you on Training Day. Did you get a credit for Training Day, just being giant muscular guy in Training Day?
Yeah. I was called uncredited gang member. That was it. Uncredited gang member. But you know what? It's not one break. It's literally a series, what I call a series of happy accidents. You know what I mean? You turn around and one thing that leads to the next, that leads to the next. And a lot of my success has come from just going and being in proximity. I went through the set of Training Day to watch Denzel work and ended up in the movie. The fact is, when I retired from the NFL, we were broke. We decided to be broke in L.A. You can be broke anywhere. So we said, go to L.A. and let's be broke here. And that's where everything changed for me. And I figured out a long time ago, you have to kind of just go for it. Just try it. Just do it. I mean, listen, the thing is, nobody really remembers your failures. They only remember the success. You know what I mean? You'll get called out in a couple of days after something doesn't work. But when you hit big, oh, my God, nobody remembers the bad stuff.
How broke was broke?
Hey, man, I was digging in the couch for change so I can get milk for the kids. That kind of broke. Like, we didn't have gas money. We didn't have anything. So broke that I had to go to a place called Labor Ready, where they paid you by the day. You did. I swept floors in a factory. And at the end of the day, I was up there with ex-cons and drug addicts and the whole thing. And they give you a job, and manual labor, and they gave me a check. I weighed $8 an hour. They gave me I worked for 8 hours. They gave me a check, $64. And then by the time I got done with taxes, it was $48. I put $20 in the tank. And there it is. I had a little bit left. I gave the rest to my wife, And then I gave my wife $20, and then I had just $8 in my hand. That was it.
How was your confidence level then? What was your mental state then?
It was a mess. It was a mess. I mean, I thought, you know, when you got to go. No, I was in the NFL, so to come down to this point, I thought I'm going to, you know, like, how low can I go? This is it. But then what a funny thing happened. Like, as I was sweeping, I was like, wow, you know what, Terry? You're actually doing something about your situation. You are changing your situation right now. Listen, and then when they gave me my money, what was weird is that I realized, wait a minute, yesterday you had nothing. Today you got $48. And I went, oh, my God, this is how it works. And I changed, man. After that, I was like, I'll never, ever not work again.
Were you selling paintings in the locker room in the NFL to make extra money? Did I read that correctly, or am I remembering it wrong?
Oh, no. That's correct. You are correct. Once I would get cut from teams, I would go back in the locker room and ask the players if they want to purchase painting because I had to survive. And I had, at the time I was in the NFL, I've been married. I had two kids, two little girls. And I would bring my portfolio in the locker room, and I had to humble myself. You know, it was humbling because people were like, oh, that's Terry, you know, and everybody felt very uncomfortable because they felt like, yeah, you know, he was on the team, now he's not on the team. Cause, you know, what would happen is you'd be connected with these guys, and then everybody would feel so weird. You're kind of out of the loop. You know what I mean? It was like the team is doing their thing, and you were cut, so you're not on the team anymore. But I would go back in, and I would usually befriend an equipment guy, and I would ask them if they could let me in the locker room, and they were like, oh, man, Chief, come on in. You know, this is why you got to be nice to everybody. You know what I mean?
Well, you are so nice, though, Terry. I think people are always taken aback. I mean, you're always giving off positivity. I wonder when that changed, like when you realized, okay, I can be an inspiration. I can help people by simply bringing sunshine around them.
Well, you know, it's not even about sunshine. It's just you respect people as human beings. There's a big belief, man, that people feel like they are just worth more than other people. They feel like I'm just a little more human than you, so I can step on you. But that you can't do that. That's a human being. I don't care where they are in life. I don't care who they are. I don't care about their gender. I don't care about anything. One thing that hit me is that you gotta respect people. If you don't do that, you are headed for major, major problems. And, you know, all this thing like, well, when I get to this spot, I can dog people out. But that's literally a belief. People really feel like when they get this way, now I can do whatever I want and step on people. And they can't wait to do it. And I personally just recognize that you've got to treat everyone with respect. That doesn't mean you have to give everybody what they want. You know what I mean? But you have to respect everybody. And a good morning, hello, how are you, sir, that's deserving of every man on earth. I don't care who they are.
Have you found Hollywood to be off-putting in terms of the number of people you run into and there's a lot of arrogance there? Or you're a celebrity, so they don't treat you like that?
That happens everywhere with success. It can be off-putting in any business. I remember meeting guys that doing things in Michigan and General Motors, and boy, these guys thought they were better than everybody, you know, so much so that they actually took a private jet to go ask the government for a bailout. And you're like, what is happening here, you know? And then you realize this stuff just comes with success. It's not about Hollywood or politics or sports. It's about success. And the fact is, people are like, I'm in this position. Now I can get what I want. I can use you. This is what happened with my agency. This is the agency I gave millions of dollars to. I had a couple million. And this guy felt like he could just freaking grab me at a party and felt like, well, you know, what are you going to do about it? And I couldn't believe it. I went to the agency. The head of the agency looked at me like, well, you know what? Sorry, buddy. That's just the way it goes. And I'm going, you're crazy.
It was so powerful to have someone specifically who looks like you. When's the last time anyone stepped to you? Like, really stepped to you looking for a fight? When's the last time that happened?
Oh, man. You know what? I remember I was on the set of Idiocracy. Not the set, but it was after we shot the movie Idiocracy. We were in Austin, Texas. And these guys, we went in this bar, man. These guys, you know, they look at me as a challenge and the whole thing. And I put this guy down. First of all, my wife will tell you, you know, she's seen grown men fly over her head. Okay, the question is, can Terry Crews whoop ass? That's not that's really, really not the question. The question is my God, man, I have so much to lose. You know what I mean? Like, my wife sat me down years back. She, after I had really put some guy came over to her and smacked her on the arm, whatever. I put this guy out. We went home. She's like, honey, you could never do that again, ever. She said, you are going to be a target. Police will shoot you. You will be in jail. And where will you be then? And it hit me. You're like, you know what? She's right. She's right. You can't fight your way out of situations. You just can't, because there's going to be a time when somebody is going to knock you out. What you have to do is think your way out of situations. So I started going, when people were like, you know, I can whoop your ass, Terry Crews. I was like, you know what? You probably can. And they go, oh, okay. You know what I mean? It was different. I realized you got to think your way. I'm like, yeah, man, you know what, boy? You're strong, dude. I'm telling you, I would never want to fight you. And then they go, oh, okay, all right, you know, because that's not what they expected. And when this thing happened to me, of course I wanted to put my fist through this guy's head. But I realized, wow, what would the next day say? You got to think about how this thing would play out. Because this is the deal. This is a super rich white man. He could say, hey, man, I bumped into Terry Crews. He knocked me out. And, you know, who would you believe? Who would the press believe? I don't care how nice I've been. When you look like me, there's more responsibility. It's almost like having your hand on a nuclear weapon. You know what? You can justify it. You can press the button. But everybody would be like, why'd you do that? I could blow the whole house up. But you have more responsibility now. They would look at me like, hey, you should have never done that. And I realized that was the way to go. So I took it the legal route. I went to everybody who's supposed to have protected me. And then when they didn't, I had to just keep going up the ladder. I went on a freaking press tour. You know what I mean? And they were like, finally, they called No Mas, because they were like, dude, the dude did it. First, they tried to deny it, said that I was taking advantage of the Me Too movement. I was like, what? Like, that's something you really want to tell everybody. You know what I mean? Like, believe me, man, it's so crazy. They felt like I was somehow going to take advantage of that. Like those guys were lining up to say who molested them. But that's not the case. That was a last resort on my end, because I realized they were not going to hold this guy accountable. That was it.
It comes with different responsibility now, though, too, right? Because once you tell that story, everywhere you go now, someone is moved by that. And then they want to talk to you. And furthermore, they want to tell you their own story. There's an emotional drain in that, isn't there?
Oh, you know what, though? Not for me. Because for one, I remember Oscars parties last year. It was crazy because it was really, really fever pitch. And we were going to these parties. And I, my thing is, remember, what the biggest thing about this, and I went to therapy, is that you feel shame. And you have to ask yourself, why do I feel shame? Talking about this stuff, I did nothing wrong. And I had to continue to tell myself that stuff. Because what happens is, people, you know, you come out with a story and you feel shame. People feel shame hearing it. So you want to hide. You want to run. You want to hide. So I did the opposite. What I did is just go to every event, go to different functions, go do press, do this thing. I did nothing wrong. I am not the wrongdoer. And I continued to say that. And what happened is, we would go to these events, and the guys with these producers are like, oh, there he is, Terry Crews. They run away from me. But their wives would come right up to me and with tears in their eyes and say, it happened to me. And they would tell me their story. And then I knew. I said, you know what? This is rampant, dude. This is, people have tried to act like, well, you know, these are just a few cases, but it's not. It's not. It's a complicit system that people have taken advantage of forever and ever. I remember being in college and, you know, a football player rapes a girl and they ask the girl to leave the school. You understand what I mean? Because the guy's got a game on Saturday. This is ridiculous, man. This is where everybody realized that the predator is not going to be punished. There's never going to be repercussions. And it's hard. It's really, really difficult. But you don't want to think about it because, oh, my God, it's just too horrible. It's too shameful. But that we have to speak about these things, because you go, man, if you don't check it, if you remain silent, that's what they want. That's how people get away with stuff. You know what I'm saying? We got to talk about this stuff. If we never talk about it, it will continue unabated.
How did your life change? You said your life changed. You expected to lose Hollywood, but it ended up being more positive than that, right?
It sure did. I have to say, because for every person that didn't like me, there were three people who did that were like, thank you, thank you. You know, that's the thing about coming forward. Because if people don't know, what are they going to do? But once people knew, people were forced into a decision. I mean, and, you know, and I changed the narrative, man. I changed the story. Because people were like, hey, man, it's impossible for Terry Crews to be sexually assaulted. I, Terry Crews, proved that size does not matter when it comes to this thing. You know what I mean? Even if I beat the guy up, did it mean I wasn't assaulted? No. No. Actually, that actually proves you've been assaulted. So, but some people feel like by knocking a guy out, you all of a sudden, you know, counteracted it. And it didn't really happen. But, man, first of all, size doesn't matter. It does not matter. These kind of things, people count on the fact that you are not going to tell because this is about power. It has nothing to do with sex. And, you know, power rules when it comes to this deal. And I feel so, so grateful and honored to be on the right side of history and to call guys on what it is and to really be a definition of what this is. And I just feel like it's my purpose, man. You know what I mean? You start to wonder why you were put on the earth, and then you realize, and when people come to you in tears and thank you for giving them the strength to tell their story and they become free, you start to realize, man, this is bigger than me. It's bigger than my comfort. It's bigger than my money. It's bigger than my career. Hey, man, this is where it is. And when you make people free, hey, man, they support you. They support you. I got a whole bunch of people who are backing me up and will make sure Terry Crews is going to work. And I actually, to the point where I have two shows right now. And I never had to give up my dream and give up my what I love to do. But you know what? Back in the day, if you were a young black man who was trying to get in a business and somebody had power over you, they would just X you out. You had a great idea. They would just take it. And you couldn't do anything. Man, I have to do what I have to do for those people who never got a shot, who never got a chance. All the women whose careers were cut short. And they really wanted to do their thing. And they were told no. I mean, it breaks my heart, man. It really, really breaks my heart. Because, you know, people feel like, oh, that's not possible. But, man, it's all possible. Hey, man, we go back to Little Rock, Arkansas, when these little kids were trying to integrate this school, and there were grown men spitting on these kids. Hey, man, this happens, dude. We can change the whole thing. And what happened was when people started seeing it, and you put it out there, and you see pictures of grown men spitting on kids because they're trying to go to school, you start to realize, man, this isn't right. This isn't right. You know, if nobody sees, this is what journalism is about. It's supposed to be about that, you know, showing what's going on so that people can really fight the proper way and get, you know, get justice the right way.
You mentioned that no one was around to teach you certain things that you wanted to know. And you also mentioned that you went to therapy. Was there any difficulty? You come from the NFL. You don't talk about your feelings. You don't get up in your feelings. Men often are told to not talk about their feelings. Can you take us through the process without it being too invasive of how you ended up choosing therapy? What required that?
My wife leaving me. You know, when she stepped out, it was a wrap. I had to go revamp my life. I had to break it down because you got to understand this, Dan. I was very successful. See, success is the warmest place to hide. What's so crazy, man, is that when you are successful, nobody's going to call you on your junk. Nobody. They're like, well, he's winning. He's got money, and he's very popular, and he's very famous. But this is what's happening now. And now, in this new day, a new era, you know, in the past, the image was good enough. In the past, just put up the image. Hey, as long as we look good, it's okay. But now people are demanding that you back up that image with real stuff. No one's taking Cosby anymore. First of all, Bill Cosby was one of the biggest disappointments in my entire life. I looked up to that man like unbelievably. I was like, this is the guy. There's no way he could have done this stuff. And as each woman came forward, it became more and more evident. Holy cow, he was hiding in his success. And I said, we have got to call out people who are doing that. You have to be real. You cannot be fake. You can't be two people. And that's what I learned in my therapy. When I first got there, I was two people. I was like the image that everybody loved, and then the real Terry Crews. Huh. And I was like, you know, I was in love with my own image. You got to understand, every man lives in their own action movie. You know what I mean? We got titles, we got trailers, we got the whole thing, smoke and mirrors, we got CGI. It's a beautiful movie.
But yours is actually an action movie, though. Like your life is an action movie, a bit of one.
Literal action movie. I'm blowing guns, you're blowing people away, you're like da da da. And then your wife comes in, turns the light on, and is like, ah, you're ruining my movie. You're ruining my image. But the thing is, she's like, no, none of that's real. It's all CGI. Can you really do it? No. And we're in love with this image. The image was, I was supposed to beat this guy up. I was supposed to kill him. I was supposed to rip him in half and walk away in slow-mo as the building blew up behind me. But that's not real life. Real life means I went to jail. You know what I mean? Real life is I'm fighting this case for the next 20 years. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's real life, dude. And you know, we've been in Hollywood and in real life, everybody loves the story more than they love what actually happened. And I'm here to say, guys, let's stop. Let's get off the movie and let's get into real life. Because let me tell you, football players are dying early. You know what I mean? It's crazy when I look at this whole thing. When I look at the careers of players, man, these guys, you know, when you got players dying at 50, there's like 8-9 members of the Chargers that all died before 45 on my team. And I'm like, this is not right, man. You know, what's the purpose, dude? The purpose is you want to be able to live long, not you're going to give up 20 years for so you can have some money. You know what I mean? Like, I'd much rather, you know, I want to live to 80, 90. You know what I'm saying? I want to do like a real person. But people have now just taken that, well, that's, it's the way it is. You soldier or whatever. Now that you get concussed and you get hit and you blew your knees out, that's what you get. You only, you know, you got your money for it. And that's, it doesn't work that way, man. I'm here to just let everybody know that we can all get better. All this stuff is fixable.
Can you tell us when your wife called bullshit on you, the time or times where you felt like there was real learning in it that you've been able to carry forth later in life? Because losing her love, you've told us before, like that you really learned some things when you didn't think it was possible that your wife would actually leave all that, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because, you know, you're taught as a man, you got control. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, look, I pay for this and I do this. And then she was like, I don't care. I'll start over. I mean, she literally was like, I'll start over from scratch. And that hit me. It was like, because this is the deal. And I say this all the time, is that it is impossible to love someone and control them at the same time. And we have mixed up control with love. And you think, you know, you're controlling this and you're controlling that. And you've been taught as a man, control your wife. I had people say, hey, man, you better control your wife. You better control your life. And you feel like, But see, you can't dominate people. You can dominate situations. You can dominate environments. But you cannot dominate people. And people have it mixed up. There are people who right now, unless everybody's uncomfortable at work, you're not working. The job is hard enough, man. But unless you are totally uncomfortable, you haven't earned your money yet. And I reject all of that because I lived it. I mean, my time in the NFL, I had a coach that called me Tyrone. I was like, Coach, my name is Terry. And he was like, no, I like Tyrone. I'm going to call you Tyrone. This is in the NFL. This is a white guy in the NFL who decided he was going to call me Tyrone. I was like, how abusive can that be? But I took it because I wanted to play. You want to play the game. And they're playing games with your head. I'll never forget the Richie Incognito stuff. People were like, oh, man, he's a punk. He's sorry because he didn't want to be teased. But why do you have to put up with that? The job is hard enough. And I can't even bring up, there's more examples. Vontae Davis, he decided he was going to just quit in halftime from Buffalo Bills. He quit at halftime. He was leaving. He was like, I'm out. And people were like, I'm ready to fight that dude. The players should fight him. I'm going, what are you talking about? First of all, it's a game. It's a game. We're not talking about the military operation. It's a game. Now, I totally understand going AWOL and leaving your guys in a bunker when people are shooting at you and you're in war. By all means, that is treason. But on a football team, look, if you decide to quit the Army softball team, hey, man, you just didn't want to play anymore. You know what I mean? It's a game, dude. If you quit the Army softball team, it is not a fireable offense. It is not treason. It's just, I don't want to do it anymore. And you know what? It's a game, guys. It's a game. You're not supposed to give your life for this game. It doesn't work that way.
Do you have a project anywhere on your resume that is the most fulfilling project? I know that's hard to choose from, but I'm wondering if one.
I don't know. They keep changing, man. Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Right now, America's Got Talent is the number one show on television. I mean, our ratings came in last night. We topped what we did last week. We were number one last week, and we topped that. And I'm sitting here like, holy cow, this really fulfills me in so many ways simply because I love the crowd. I love, listen, there's nothing wrong with football. When I played football, it was awesome, man. Tackling and making a play and the crowd gets behind you, it's a wonderful thing. And now I'm getting that, and I'm not concussed. I'm getting that, and I get no knees. You know, I got my knees. I'm sitting here, I'm 50 years old. And I literally, I'm calling myself the Bo Jackson of this thing because I go host AGT, get in the car, then go to the set of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and I'm going, man, this is a two-sport brother right now. You know what I mean? And it doesn't have to end. You can do more than one thing. But it's just if we kind of have wrapped up sports into like that, this is the pinnacle. But it's not. And that's the thing I'm really, really so satisfied with. This AGT, America's Got Talent, hosting the show, the number one talent show in the world. And I had to learn how to host, like regroup and learn a new skill when I hosted Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and then worked my way up through hosting all this other stuff. But I said, I'm going to get this skill so that it can really, really open me up as an entertainer. And, oh, my God, dude, it's so satisfying, and it's incredible. And it's number one. That's what I love.
If I had told you back when you were McCheesy in Longest Yard, what's going to happen? What's going to happen from here? What would your answer have been?
Oh, man, I probably would have thought I would have just done movies, and that was it. I thought I was going to be, like, strictly movie star and the whole thing. But what people don't count on is that, you know, TV is bigger than ever. And it's literally some of my best times have been in watching television as opposed to going to the theater. All the stuff that I'm doing right now, I never saw coming. I'll be honest with you. Never saw coming. I'm actually designing furniture. You know, I have a children's book that I just produced that's coming out, you know, with hosting AGT and the success of Brooklyn Nine-Nine and be able to do it all like this. I never thought, man, I never did. If you had came to me back then and said this was going to happen, I wouldn't have believed you.
What is the children's book about and why did you decide to do it?
You know, check this out. It's a book that I did with the all-pro linebacker Ken Harvey 20 years ago. We did it. And we put it out in the Washington, D.C. area because I was his backup. But here's the deal. What happened was the book was still around. I still had the art from the book. And when Bill Cosby went down, Fat Albert, all that stuff, all these little examples of great, you know, entertainment for kids, I couldn't watch anymore. I said, we need to re-release this book. So we decided to re-release it, but we made it augmented reality. So we have an app. So we put the app on the book, the characters pop right out of the page. We revamped it. And the book is based on his sons. It's called Come Find Me. The book is based on his sons. There were two sons, and they were, at the time, they were like 5 and 3. And now both of them have their master's degrees from college and they're grown men. And it's just one of the greatest stories I've ever seen. It's 20 years ago and now they're superstars. I think it's just a great example for people to follow and to watch and to see. And Ken wrote the book. I illustrated it and I put my art talent to use, man. I'll never stop drawing and painting.
You don't think you're working too much though? I know you love to work and I know you're a grinder, but you don't think you're working too much?
No, there's no such thing as too much. You know what? When you're competing, that's when you burn out. But when you're being creative, it's just you get energy for days. It's like when you love what you do, hey, man, what kind of life? I get to do this. It's so crazy. I get to jump from, I'm on private jets from one place to the next, and I go, my God, what a life, man. What a life. And it comes with no sorrow with it. I've been married 30 years. five beautiful kids, one granddaughter, and my best days are still ahead of me. What's so crazy is that the next 20 years are going to be better than what came before them.
Holy shit, though. Terry Crews is a grandpa? A grandpa? Terry Crews is a grandpa.
I'm a 9-year-old. Yes, I'm a badass grandpa, dude. That's the thing.
You're the coolest grandpa. You know jujitsu, do you not?
Oh, no. I don't. I know crazy. I don't know karate. I know crazy.
Terry, it's always good catching up with you. Go support the stuff Terry does. It's Brooklyn Nine-Nine. What did you think Brooklyn Nine-Nine was going to be, by the way? If I told you when you started, where is this going to get end up? What were your expectations?
I wanted it to go long, but you know, you don't get to call that. But holy cow, getting canceled and picked back up, that was insane. I mean, who gets that? Nobody. You know, and now being on NBC and it being one of the most popular sitcoms in the whole world, you got to understand, I can go anywhere. Like, I'll go to Australia and they're like, Terry Crews. I go to South Africa, they're like, Terry Crews. That is crazy to me. I get off the plane, they know me. That's nuts. Huh. And I am the most grateful man in Hollywood. Because a year ago, I thought it was over. And that's what makes this whole thing even more special.
Your story's pretty cool, man. I'm glad that you continue to share it with us. Thank you for stopping by and spending some time with our listeners.
I got you, Dan. Thank you, my man.
Want to thank Terry Crews for his time. Not a lot of people doing what he is doing that way. He's a very unlikely face and voice and body and gender for the Me Too movement, but he's doing meaningful things. Next week, we're going to switch it up a little bit. We're going to moderate a discussion. We're going to try and make Stadium Talk interesting by having David Sampson, the former Marlins team president, brawl with Billy Corbin, the guy who is a civic activist and did Cocaine Cowboys, did the U movie. If you like what you're getting here, you want to keep it free, we need you to rate, review, and subscribe. We need you to support the sponsors. Next week, we're going to have a brawl between David Sampson and Billy Corbin.